The following message is brought to you by Terry Moore. And now, Mr. Moore.
So let's go ahead and open up to Exodus in chapter 20. Exodus in chapter 20, I think you probably know where I'm going with this. And I want to begin by noting that when building a company of true value, it's vital to have a foundation of principles that must be followed by all of the employees in order for this company to be successful. And when starting a family, it's important for the family to possess ethics that are based upon the greater good. And when forming relationships, therefore, of any kind, we see that in order for that relationship to be long-lasting and meaningful, there must be moral principles that both parties strive to follow. And so it is, therefore, with God and with His people. You see, at the beginning of creation, God made the first man and woman, that is, the beginning of our creation. He made the first man and woman. And when He did, there were moral standards that these individuals had to live by. They were already in place, even before He made Adam and Eve. And these principles came to be known as the Ten Commandments, as we know them, when they were given to the people of Israel from Mount Sinai. And so several months ago, I began a series of messages regarding the Ten Commandments, a sermon on each commandment. We began with the first, having no other gods, and the second, and the third. And today, so we're going to go to the fourth commandment, and I would like to discuss this in a bit more detail. And so the fourth commandment is one that we are all familiar with. It's a part of the reason we are here, in fact, today, keeping the Sabbath. And tens of thousands, in fact, around the world claim to be in line with keeping the Sabbath as they attend services all over the globe. But are they really? Are they really keeping the Sabbath? Are we truly keeping the fourth commandment? It's something to consider as we go through some of the aspects of the Sabbath. And so I want to begin by reading this important law. I know Mr. Quinn read Exodus 31 and as it was restated there, but let's go ahead and look at when it was first given to Israel here in Exodus 20 in verse 8, where it says, "To remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Eternal your God. In it you shall do no work, you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor the stranger that is within your gates. For in 6 days the Eternal made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. And therefore the Eternal blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it." And so this particular command, it's a little bit lengthy, isn't it? It contains more words than any of the other single commands that stand by themselves. And so we see it that it goes into various details regarding when to keep the Sabbath, how to keep the Sabbath, who is to keep the Sabbath, and why we are to keep the Sabbath. And so it begins by stating in verse 8, to remember the Sabbath. And ironically, this is one of the commandments that most people of the world forget as they disregard the seventh day and its purpose. And so it goes without saying that people should remember all of God's commandments. All of them need to be kept in mind. And so understanding this, why, you know, I ask the question, why would God feel the need to emphasize this here on the fourth commandment, to remember this particular one, if we are to remember them all? Well, I think the answer comes from the meaning of the word remember, and this Hebrew word is zakar, which means to mark, to mention, to be mindful, to recount, to record, and to call to remembrance. And so we see that this instruction, it really has multiple meanings. It means more than simply recalling to mind. It relates how God's people are to mark the seventh day, to set it apart from the other 6 days of the week. It speaks of how we are to speak about the Sabbath day, what it means to us, how it's to be kept, what it portrays, and the benefit that can be gained from keeping the Sabbath. It also means that we are to be mindful of the Sabbath, but not only when, but how it should be observed. And of course, it means that we are to recount the reason for its observance, and it even states the reason indirectly in the commandment. And then we are to remember, therefore, all of these things. Let's go over to 2 Thessalonians in chapter 3. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. After the initial instruction here to remember the Sabbath in Exodus 20, God gave instructions about the other 6 days of the week, didn't he? He said that 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. And so this means that we not only have 6 days every week to work, but that we should work, that we have a work that we should do, not just to attain food and to keep clothes on our back and to have a house or an apartment to live in, but to contribute to our families and to society to some degree. And so in this, we can see that there is a work for all of us to do. We all have different things that we do in different ways. Now, notice then that the instructions do not say 6 days you may labor or 6 days you can work if you want to, but you don't have to. This is because, as God's people, he wants us to be productive as we are able. We are to be workers of good, aren't we? He wants us to contribute to the well-being of one another and to our environment to a degree, as I said before. But, you know, there are some people that might have different work to do. But no matter what the job, there are chores to be done. Tasks are an inevitable part of life, and we should not try to avoid them, but we should follow through to our responsibilities, our duties. And so we were therefore designed to be productive. God gave us muscle. He gave us bone. He gave us hands to work with. And these are all functional. You know, most of us can function with most of our body in some way. And even those people that are handicapped can be very productive. I've seen documentaries and clips of people that have various handicaps that can still be very productive in society. And this is because God designed us this way. The body is resilient. And for this reason, Paul wrote to the church, and he wrote to them while speaking of the example that he and other ministers gave when he was among the church here in Thessalonica. And so 2 Thessalonians and chapter 3 and verse 8, he said this. He said, when we were there or among them, did we eat anyone's bread free of charge? But worked with labor. No, they did not. They worked with labor and toil night and day that we might not be a burden to any of you. Not because we do not have authority, but to make ourselves an example of how you should follow us. For even when we were with you, we commanded you this, that if anyone will not work, neither shall he eat. And then he goes on to say that he heard that there were some who walk among them that were disorderly in this way, not working at all, but were busybodies, as he labels them here. And so Paul related that work relates to having the right to eat. And this is because, you know, it requires work to produce food, doesn't it? You remember the child story of the little red hen and how she went out to her friends and she said, you know, I need to plant some wheat. Will anyone help me plant the wheat? And the other friends were like, oh, no, I need to go play my fiddle and I need to go do this and I need to go do that. And she says, well, okay, well, it's time to water the wheat. Anyone want to help me? No, I don't have time for that. I need to do this. I need to do that. And, well, it's time to harvest the wheat. Anyone have time to help me? No, I don't have time for that. I have other fun things to do. Well, it's time to grind the wheat and to make the bread. And no, nobody wants to help. But at the end, she said, well, now it's time to eat the bread. Anyone want to eat the bread with me? Oh, yeah, I'll eat the bread. I'll eat the bread. They all want to eat the bread. And she says, nope, sorry. I did all the work. I guess I'll just eat the bread myself. And so we see that bread or food requires work to maintain an existence. And so those people that do not work to some degree, I guess, would just be living off the labor of others. And this is what Paul talks about here. We need to work. You know, it makes us worthy of receiving food. And so we all strive, therefore, to pull our own weight to some degree and not to be a busybody, as Paul labeled some of these other people here. And it's interesting, this expression, busybody, is a Greek word which means to work around. In other words, working around having to work, to bustle about or meddle, to, you know, seem like I'm really busy, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, but you're really just meddling in the affairs of other people and not, you know, not the things that you should be taking care of as an individual. And so we see that the fourth commandment indicates that God's people are to work 6 days of the week. And we have this time that is to be devoted to fulfilling our duties, our responsibilities. And so the next part of the command states that the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Eternal. And then Sabbath is an interesting word. It's a Hebrew word that's pronounced Shabbat, or Sabbath. It's the same word, but it literally means intermission. An intermission. It's a day when the activities that are found in the other 6 days of the week stop. And we pause for a time, a 24-hour period, and refocus. We are rejuvenated to a degree in this. And so our activities turn towards something else during the Sabbath. Now, the difficulty that many people may have is defining what is considered work. What is considered in work? And what are inappropriate Sabbath activities? You know, some believe that work only relates to that which is strenuous, that takes a lot of physical exertion. Others think that, well, you know, making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich is work, and so I'm not going to do that on the Sabbath. But I'm not going to go into minute details in an attempt to create a list of do's and don'ts for everybody on the Sabbath, because I think they're fairly clear. But I will say that, you know, typical household chores, those are considered work. Anything that's business related, these activities are considered work. And not just the physical aspect of it, it's the mental part. If you're thinking about, I'm going to do this, I need to do that to the house, I need to do that. Or if you're thinking about, what am I going to do Monday when I get back to work, or Sunday when I start working and start making plans in your head. This is a type of work. It's mental activity that can be considered work. Let's go all the way back to Exodus and chapter 16 this time. Exodus and chapter 16. Much of the debate around what household work should not be done, I think, is related to the preparation of food. Because I think all Sabbath keepers would agree that mowing the lawn on the Sabbath is wrong. You know, vacuuming or doing laundry, that's inappropriate Sabbath activity. But the kind of food preparation that is unacceptable on the Sabbath is not clear to some people. However, there is an example of what type of preparation should not be done on the Sabbath. And I believe this makes the issue easy for us to define. And so we know that God gave Israel manna. As they came out of Egypt and they needed food, God gave Israel manna to eat. And he did so as a test. And he stated this in Exodus 16 and verse 5. The Eternal said to Moses, "Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain quota or amount every day, that I may test them." And here comes the test, whether they will walk in my law or not. "And it shall be on the sixth day that they shall gather and prepare what they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather daily." So 5 days of the week, they gather a certain amount. But on the sixth day, they were to gather twice as much. And this, of course, is a reference to the sixth being the day of preparation. And so they prepare twice as much this day. And why? Well, we know the answer to that. But let's go ahead and read it here. Partway through verse 23 in Exodus 16. It says, "Tomorrow is a Sabbath rest, a holy Sabbath to the Eternal. Bake what you will bake today, the sixth day, and boil what you will boil, and lay up for yourselves all that remains to be kept until the morning." And so the people laid it up until the morning, as Moses commanded, and it did not stink, as it would have if they gathered twice as much the other days, nor were there worms in it. And so Moses said, "Eat that today, for today is a Sabbath to the Eternal, and today you will not find this food out in the field. 6 days you will gather it, but at the seventh day is the Sabbath, and there will be none." So people were not to go out acquiring food on the Sabbath. So there's one of the guidelines we can follow. We don't go out seeking to acquire food on the Sabbath. But there's something else going on here, isn't there? There is the issue of cooking food on the Sabbath. And this should not be done, because God said to bake what you will bake the previous day, the sixth day, and boil what you will boil on the sixth day, and then lay that up and eat it the next day. And so baking and boiling are two forms or methods of cooking food. In other words, what he's saying is cook what you're going to cook the previous day, and then lay it up and eat that on the Sabbath. Now, some people might say that because these instructions regard preparing food, that no food preparation should be done on the Sabbath, that we shouldn't cut up any lettuce on the Sabbath, that we shouldn't peel an orange on the Sabbath, or put together a cold-cut sandwich, put a little mayonnaise on the bread. Nope, that's considered work. Some people would not do it. But, you know, I'm not going to make that decision for everyone. But if we take God's words here at face value of what is actually being said, he's not saying you can't peel an orange. He's not saying you can't pour yourself a cup of milk. What he's saying is you can't cook food. Do not cook food on the Sabbath. And therefore, I, for one, would avoid any food preparation that involves cooking, whether it's baking or boiling or roasting or simmering or steeping or sautéing. All of this has to do with bringing food's temperature up to an extreme level. And this should be avoided. Now, reheating food, we've had this question in the past. This is a separate issue. It's similar, but it is actually a separate issue, because if a food is already prepared, it's already been cooked, it's already been brought to that high level of temperature where the food is all cooked, causing it to become warm is not considered cooking. We would not consider that cooking food at all. We believe that reheating is not what God spoke of. Now, because we have modern inventions, we have microwaves, we have many other devices which makes cooking food, crock pots, it makes cooking food very, very simple, as easy as flipping a switch or pushing a few buttons, program it in and just let it cook for us on the Sabbath if we wanted to. Well, because it's so simple today in many ways, some people believe, well, cooking, it can be seen as acceptable in our modern age because it requires very little effort. Well, my answer to that view would be that there are ways to cook that are relatively effortless today. It doesn't, you know, you can cut up all the food and get it all ready and put it in the crock pot and let it sit there and then just program it to come on during the Sabbath or turn it on the Sabbath. People can do that. Is it appropriate? I would say it is not appropriate because God says, do not cook. And I wouldn't try to redefine, well, what is considered cooking? Is it cooking is only that which takes a lot of effort? Well, in those days, it did take a lot of effort. In our day, not as much. But is it still cooking? Yes, it's still cooking food. And so I would not try to redefine it in the light of modern technology. I instead would choose to simply do what God says and just avoid cooking in any shape or form. It's not that difficult. People try to make it, oh, well, it's so hard. I need to eat. I need to have some kind of food to eat. Was it really that difficult? I mean, we have sandwiches. We have all kinds of foods that we can purchase or make that will last for quite some time in a refrigerator, in a cooler, an ice chest. Any of this choices can be made. But the point is, what choices are we going to make? What kind of efforts are we going to go to obey God? That really is the issue. Let's go over to Exodus 35. Exodus 35. Because cooking requires heat that traditionally has and usually does come from fire, some people believe that we're not allowed to have any kind of fire on the Sabbath. And they combine this thought with two other passages found in the Bible. And one, of course, is the example that is very familiar to all of us of the man that went out to gather sticks on the Sabbath. And this man was stoned to death for doing this type of work. And the other example they point to is found in Exodus 35, where it states that you shall kindle no fire on the Sabbath. Now, because of all three of these examples, you know, Exodus 16, which we just read, and the man gathering sticks is in Numbers 15, and in Exodus 35, where it says to kindle no fire. Because all three of these seem to be related to having a fire, some think, well, fire in any shape or form is not allowed on the Sabbath. But in order to be clear on this, we really need to what? Consider the context. We have to look at the context. You can't, you know, take any scripture on its own without looking at the context to understand what it truly means. And so it's understood, as we went through Exodus 16 here, it's understood that cooking food is not to be done on the Sabbath. That's pretty clear cut. We all agree on that, right? Now, interestingly, and I'm not going to go there, but you can look at this later, Numbers 15, where it talks about the man going out to gather sticks on the Sabbath, this passage never states that his efforts were for the purpose of making a fire. It never says that he was gathering sticks to build a fire. It's assumed that this was his intent because the Hebrew word for sticks is eitz, and it was translated as stick in that particular place. And of course, what else would you do with a stick? You just burn it. I mean, it's really good for nothing except to burn, okay? You get a little kindling, right? But the word for sticks, this word eitz, it's used in other places in the Bible to designate wood. In fact, wood that's used by a carpenter, whether to build furniture or to make some kind of item or even to make the walls of a dwelling place. And so it's possible, and I'm not saying this is the case, but I'm just saying it is possible that this man's intent was to gather wood for the use in construction or for his trade in some way and not simply to make a fire. It's just something to consider. Now, the other place, as I had mentioned, that an inappropriate Sabbath fire is talked about is in Exodus 35. And note, before we read this, note that these instructions given to Moses and passed down to the people came shortly after Moses was given the command to build the tabernacle and with all the furniture and all its hardware and how it was to be made and the design and its function and everything. It was shortly after this, and Moses came to the people and he was going to begin to relate them what they were going to do in building the tabernacle. And so look at this now. In Exodus 35, and beginning in verse 1, Moses gathered all the congregation as he came down off the mountain. His face was shining. He gathered all the congregation together and said to them, "These are the words which the Eternal has commanded you to do. Work shall be done for 6 days, but the seventh day shall be a holy day for you, a Sabbath of rest to the Eternal. Whoever does any work on it shall be put to death. And so you shall kindle no fire throughout your dwellings on the Sabbath." Now, some will stop there, and they don't go on to read. They say, there it is, no fire on the Sabbath. Can't have any fire of any kind. And they'll leave the rest of the instructions out to make their conclusion. However, if we continue reading, if we look at the context of what happened just before, how Moses came off the mountain after receiving these instructions to build the tabernacle, and then he started to give the instructions to the people. If we consider the context, we'll see that that Moses and God was telling Israel that they shall kindle no fire. But it wasn't just any fire. It was a fire for the purpose of doing work. And so to properly understand this, we have to continue reading. Verse 4. "And Moses spoke to the congregation of the children of Israel, saying, this is the thing which the Eternal commanded, saying, take from among the people an offering to the Eternal. Whoever is of a willing heart, let him bring in an offering of gold, of silver, bronze, blue and purple and scarlet thread, fine linen, goat's hair, ram skins dyed red, badger skins, acacia wood, oil for the light, spices for the anointing oil and sweet incense, onyx stones and stones to be set in the ephod and in the breastplate. And all who are gifted artisans, all people that have gifts in trade and craftsmanship among you, they shall come and make all that the Eternal has commanded." He goes on to say the tabernacle, its tent, its coverings, its clasps, its boards, its bars, its pillars, its sockets, and on and on and on. He goes on about all of the items that were to be made. And so we can see now, considering the context, that this was regarding building the tabernacle. God had commissioned Israel to provide the materials and also the people to build this tabernacle with all of its furniture and all of its accessories, all of its tools and the nuts and bolts, everything. And so Moses began to give these instructions to the people, but he started the instructions by reiterating the fourth commandment. Why would he do this? Why would he start by reiterating the fourth commandment? And it's because despite the fact that God commanded them, instructed them to work on this holy edifice that was going to be used for a holy purpose, God wanted to remind the people, you're not going to work on it on the Sabbath. Okay? No work's to be done on the Sabbath. Let's make sure that's understood. And you shall kindle no fire on the Sabbath. And that's because a fire was used in that time to create these things, to melt, to smelt, to bend and shape and to mold. A fire was necessary for all of these things. And therefore, God said, don't create this kind of fire on the Sabbath. Don't even think about it. It's a day to stop. Stop what you're doing. It's an intermission. Stop the work on the tabernacle. Keep the Sabbath and keep it holy. And so we see then that the admonition to not kindle a fire on the Sabbath was regarding fire that would be necessary for work. Fire used appropriately on the Sabbath was allowed. In fact, if you consider this, and you don't need to turn there, but you can write it down, Numbers in chapter 28 and beginning in verse 9, or I think it might be before this, but verse 10 says, here is the burnt offering for every Sabbath, besides the regular burnt offering and the drink offering. So we see that the priests definitely had a fire going on the Sabbath. This fire was burning, and they made offerings on the Sabbath, burnt offerings. And so God allowed a fire to be burning on the Sabbath, but not for any reason. It couldn't be for any reason. It could be for offerings. It could be for warmth, as we have written in an article on our website. This would be acceptable because God would not expect people to freeze in the dead of winter on the Sabbath. Sorry, negative 25 degrees outside, you're just going to have to deal with it. You can't have a fire on the Sabbath. No, God's not. He's merciful. He's not that kind of God. He doesn't expect people to suffer or get frostbite because they are not allowed to have a fire on the Sabbath. No. If the fire is made for the purpose of cooking, it's not acceptable. If a fire is made for the purpose of doing business or working, it's not acceptable. If it's for warmth, if it's for reheating food, that's acceptable. There's nothing wrong with that. There is nothing wrong with that. It's not a problem. Let's go over to Matthew 12. There are unique forms of work that are acceptable on the Sabbath. And this is, of course, I'm speaking about work that might need to be done in emergency-type situations, that is, to preserve life or property. That type of work is acceptable. And Christ made this clear, I think, when speaking of David. You know, this is Matthew 12, and we're going to begin reading in verse 3. He was talking about an emergency situation, an ox in a ditch type of situation. David was on the run. He was fleeing for his life, him and the men with him. They were famished. They didn't have any food. David went to where the high priest was and asked, can I have the showbread? I know that there's showbread here. Can we have that to eat? We're famished. And the priest inquired of God. And God said, it's okay. You can give him the showbread. And so Christ gave this example here when speaking about his disciples, who were in a similar type situation. Verse 3, that he said to the Pharisees who were accusing them of doing work on the Sabbath, he said, have you not read what David did when he was hungry, he and those that were with him, and how he entered the house of God and ate the showbread, which was not lawful for him to eat, nor for those who were with him, but only for the priests? And so here's the example. This wasn't lawful. It wasn't right to eat the showbread. But the situation, because it was an ox in a ditch, an emergency situation, God said, it's okay. You can give them the showbread. It's just bread. It's holy because it's being used in this way, but it is just bread. You can give it to David and his men to eat. And so we see then, because of the context, that the disciples, when they were taking a few handfuls of grain and eating them off the stalks when they were walking through this field, they were in a similar situation. We don't have the story beforehand of saying exactly why this was, but Christ gave the example. When they were accused of doing work on the Sabbath, they're doing work. He said, no, wait a minute. This is an ox in a ditch. Remember what David did? That wasn't right, but God said it's okay. Why are you accusing the disciples of doing something like this? It's a similar situation. And so we see then that there is some forms of work that are allowed to be done when it's emergency, but we can't try to anticipate the emergency. We can't create the emergency and say, you know, I'm not going to buy gas today because I'll start to run out tomorrow and it'll be in an emergency and therefore I'll get gas tomorrow. It'll be okay to do some business then. No, that's you're creating the emergency now. When we're perfectly capable of getting gas the night before, of preparing the food the night before. Oh, I have to buy food on the Sabbath, you know. I need to eat. I got to have food. So I won't get any food today because tomorrow it'll be an ox in a ditch and I can... No, we can't do that. You're creating. And therefore, it's a violation of the Sabbath. And so there is another type of work that is allowed to be done on the Sabbath, and it's work that's done ministry-wise. It's done by ministers and other members of the church, and this is in order to serve God and his people. And Christ said this in Matthew 12 and verse 5, "Have you not read in the law that on the Sabbath the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath and are blameless?" And so why were they profaning the Sabbath? Well, it's because they were doing work. They were doing work. Work needs to be done in the ministry. And that's something that's not supposed to be done on the Sabbath. But there are, I mean, it has to be taken care of, right? Somebody has to do it. And but these people, so they were blameless. Blameless. They were not guilty of breaking the Sabbath, because when it pertains to duties necessary for worship services, for performing at that time, the offerings that were supposed to be given to God every Sabbath, this type of work was okay to carry out. Let's go back to Exodus 20. Back to Exodus 20. You know, the priests of old had to perform various tasks on the Sabbath and holy days. And today there are similar types of tasks. Not exactly, but it's similar. That today we have chairs that need to be set up, rearranged, like we did this morning when we came in here. There's sound systems that need to be set up, and wires need to be run from here to there. And, you know, it has to be maintained. It has to be monitored. But this type of work needs to be done by those people that are appointed by the church to do such tasks. In other words, what I'm trying to say is we can't go outside the church and hire people to do that work for us on the Sabbath. We can't say, well, I don't really want to set up the chairs. I'm going to hire a group of kids to come in. You know, I'll give them $20 or something and let them set up all the equipment and everything on the Sabbath for me. No, we're not allowed to do that. We're not allowed to do that as God's people. We can't go outside the church to do this type of work. Even if people are going to do it for free, we're not supposed to do that. It's not supposed to be done. It's inappropriate to have other people or unbelievers working for us on the Sabbath. And I think this is made clear within the very commandment itself. If you look at verse 10, a very familiar part of this commandment, it says, "You shall do no work, you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor not even your animals are to do work for you on the Sabbath, nor the stranger that is within your gates." And so this part of the command indicates who the words apply to. And so who do they apply to? Everyone. And they apply to everyone. And, you know, well, we can't stop people from doing work on this. We can't go into the stores and say, "You people got to stop doing this." But we can not have them do it for us. We cannot have them doing work for us on the Sabbath. That's very within our capability, isn't it? It's within our boundaries. It's within our gates to be able to say, "Nope, you're not going to do that for me on the Sabbath." And though many outside the church violate the Sabbath every week, we can't control every aspect of society and other people. But there are still, despite this, there are a number of what I would call twisted arguments that we have heard by even by ministers within the church that try to define who our servant might be, may or may not be, or who is the stranger that's within. We know what is within our gates anyway. But to me, and I think to most of us, the command is very clear. If they are providing a service for you, they are your servant. Doesn't matter if they're a slave or you own them or not. If they're providing you a service, they are your servant, because a service is doing what? It's serving. It's giving you a service, a task. It's doing a chore for you. If they are within the boundaries of our control, they are within our gates. We go outside of our within our gates is not just our homes. We come into this hall today. This is within our gates. We're using this hall for a church service. Is it okay for us to have people come in and start doing some work? Let's paint this wall over here. Let's change out these drapes over there because it's not our home? No. No, we're not allowed to do that, because those people are coming within the boundaries of our control, and therefore they are coming within our gates. Now, as I was thinking about this and writing this sermon, I thought of something that I thought was really interesting. Consider this. Why did God include these instructions? Nor your son, nor your daughter, your manservant, your maidservant, your cattle, or the stranger that's within your gates. Why would God include those words within this particular command and not the others? After all, everyone is supposed to keep the commandments, right? To keep all the commandments. God would like everybody to keep the commandments. But God did not say, you shall have no other gods before me, nor your son, nor your daughter, your manservant, your maidservant, your animals, or even the stranger. He didn't say, you shall not steal, not even your son, not your daughter, nor your manservant, your maidservant. No, he didn't do that with all of the other commandments, because it's understood. Everybody is supposed to not steal. Everyone is truly not supposed to have other gods. And so why did he do this? Why did he do this? Why did he make this statement within the fourth commandment? Well, I think that it might be because God knew. He knew that people would try to work around this. Busybody, working around it. He knew that people would say, you know, I know I'm one of God's people. I'm not supposed to do work on the Sabbath. But look at all the other people. They're doing work. What's wrong with having them do a little work for me? I can be productive on the Sabbath. I can have they're not believers. You know, who cares? They're going to be working anyway. That's a big argument out there in the Church of God about why they can dine out in restaurants on the Sabbath, why people try to reason they can. They're going to be working anyway. Why not have them do a little work for me? What's the harm? Well, it's because God says not to do it. That's why. That's why we're not to do it. And so God knew that people would try to get around this Sabbath command, and he made this statement as if he were saying this. Let me paraphrase it for a moment. You shall do no work on the Sabbath. And if you're thinking about farming out work on the Sabbath, think again. Not you, your son, your daughter, your servant, whether it's male or female, not even your animals. And you know what? Not even the stranger that comes within your control. Nobody is to do work for you on the Sabbath. Let's go to Isaiah in chapter 58. Isaiah, in the 58th chapter, has another aspect of Sabbath observance that we should consider, especially in our modern age. You know, today, entertainment is a large part of Western society. And so big has entertainment become that it's known as an industry. In 2012, the entertainment industry in the United States alone, this is just in our nation, the entertainment industry generated more than $479 billion in income. That is huge. It's estimated that the average American spends approximately $2,800 on entertainment every year. $2,800. That's equal to the amount that the average American spends on education and clothing annually. And though it has become rampant in our society because of modern technology, you know, we have iPods and MP3 players and DVD players and Blu-ray discs and iPad computers and all kinds of ways that people can be entertained. There's all kinds of movie theaters and concerts and events at the park. There's all kinds of entertainment possibilities today. And though it has become this way, entertainment really has always been a part of human existence. And whether it's been through music or jokes or telling stories or plays or taking a walk or sightseeing or something to that effect, these are all considered forms of entertainment. Extracurricular activity, some people might call of, you know, biking or skating or skiing, something to that effect. They're all forms of entertainment that have existed from the beginning. Well, not skiing, I don't know. I'm not sure if there's prehistoric skis. I'm not really sure. Or ancient skis, I should say. But the question for our age is this. What kind of entertainment might be acceptable on the Sabbath? Maybe it's a matter of semantics, defining exactly, well, what is entertainment? But the Bible really says little about entertainment on the Sabbath, but what it does say something. And what it does say, I think, is very telling. It's very telling. Isaiah 58 is a chapter admonishing God's people to do what is right according to his ethics. And God, through the prophet Isaiah, tells them that if they do what's right, God will bless them enormously. And it talks about preaching the gospel, about teaching the commandments, about not oppressing people, and about helping, giving to the poor and to the needy. And it then states this among these instructions, Isaiah 58 and verse 13. It says, if you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy day of the eternal, honorable, and shall honor him not doing your own ways, nor finding your own pleasure, nor speaking your own words, then you shall delight yourself in the eternal. And I will cause you to ride on the high hills of the earth and feed you with the heritage, the inheritance that is of Jacob, your father. The mouth of God has spoken. Now, this admonition instructs people to turn away our foot from the Sabbath. And what this means is to turn away your foot from trampling all over God's Sabbath, doing whatever you want, treating it the way you want to treat the Sabbath. That's what it means. Refrain from doing your own pleasure. Now, some people will say, well, what if my pleasure is to study and to pray? What if my pleasure is to worship God? Well, that's not what God is talking about here. We have to really, the Bible requires some thinking, doesn't it? We have to think about what we read and not just say, well, what if it's my pleasure to pray? I can't pray on the Sabbath. No, that's not what God is talking about. He says it right in the beginning. Don't walk all over my Sabbath. Don't go wherever you want. Do whatever you want on my Sabbath. And that's what it means. And it says that the seventh day is honorable. We should call it honorable. We should treat it honorably. The Sabbath should be respected. And so, therefore, we are to use this day to honor God. Now, does it honor God to go golfing on the Sabbath? No, it doesn't. Sorry, it might be nice for you. Doesn't honor God. Does it honor God to watch a baseball game on the Sabbath? No, sorry. Those people are obviously working, watching a sporting event on the Sabbath. They're not keeping the Sabbath. So might be enjoyable to one of us, not appropriate for the Sabbath. See, we can't do anything we want just because, well, it's not strenuous. I'm just sitting there. I'm not really doing anything. Doesn't matter. It's our own pleasure. It's something that's outside of focusing on the purpose of the Sabbath. Why are we keeping it? Why are we here on this planet? And so God reminds people, do not seek your own pleasure. Do not speak your own words, as it says. And this means not to continue in conversations about work or about planning events that are on some other day, activities that are going to happen some other day, making plans for it, working the details out. No, that's not appropriate Sabbath behavior. It's really not. We should strive to honor God on the day in which he rested from his work, and he called the day holy. He sat back and thought about what he had done. He meditated on his creation and said, this is special. This is extra special. And I want everybody to refocus on this day, just as he did. And so God blessed the day. He marked it special. He treated it differently than the other 6 days. And so he gave us the example. He gave us the example of both what and also what not to do on the Sabbath. Let's go to Acts in chapter 1. Because there are entertainment mediums that can be used in different ways, there are certain things that can be enjoyed or partaken of on the Sabbath, if you will. And so let's look at a couple of examples. And I want anybody to make a list by what I'm saying. You have to think about this and do what's right according to the guidance of the Bible and God's Spirit within us. And so, but here's an example, relaxing music. relaxing music can be a way to help people to unwind. It can create an atmosphere for respite on the Sabbath. And certainly there are biblically based documentaries or some movies, certain biblically based movies that can be enjoyed on the Sabbath. They can be educational. They can be helpful, actually, in our study of the Bible. Often when my family will watch a biblically based movie, we break out the Bible with it. And as it's going through the events in the movie, we compare, is it a match? Can help us to do Bible study even by watching some of these things and comparing it to the Scriptures. But in times past, these kind of mediums were not readily available. People did not always have access to music. Obviously, they didn't have MP3 players or CDs, but they didn't always even have music readily available unless there was a musician within the family or within the group. People could not always place a DVD in a player and let's start watching this documentary. No, it was a harder life physically in times past. And many people during those times would find it delightful to be able to sit for hours and not move because they worked so hard the other 6 days of the week. And therefore, because of this, I think taking a slow, relaxing walk on the Sabbath while talking with your spouse or with a friend, a church member, or your son or daughter, taking this kind of slow, relaxing walk on the Sabbath, I think was not on the agenda for most people in times past, because they worked very, very hard the rest of the day of the week. But in our sedentary society, many people find that walking is relaxing, that it's actually you can walk and kind of meditate while you're walking. Now, hiking is a different story. I won't even go there. I think we all understand hiking on the Sabbath, inappropriate. It's strenuous. You're going long distances, up or down hills or whatever it might be. That's inappropriate activity. But a moderate walk on the Sabbath, I think, can be nice. It can be helpful, even. But the issue becomes, how far is too far to walk on the Sabbath? How far is too far to go where the activity now becomes, well, now it's like exercise. I'm working up a little bit of perspiration here. You know, this is getting a little bit, I'm breathing a little bit hard. How far is too far? Which goes beyond actually relaxing the mind and the body. Well, in all honesty, the Bible does not directly spell out how far is too far to walk on the Sabbath. There is no, thus says the Lord, giving us the appropriate Sabbath that we are able to walk on the Sabbath. But what is stated is a reference here in Acts 1. There's a reference to what may have actually been a tradition. It's not clear. But in Acts 1, the author wrote this when speaking of the apostles, and in verse 12, it says, they returned to Jerusalem from the mount called Olivet, which is near Jerusalem. And this distance was a Sabbath day's journey. And that's it. That's all that's said. A Sabbath day's journey was the distance from the Mount of Olives to Jerusalem. Doesn't say if it's to the gates of Jerusalem or to the center of Jerusalem. Doesn't really say. And so the author, we see, referenced this as a Sabbath day's journey. And so some people believe that this span here was 7 furlongs. And 7 furlongs would be approximately 1 mile as we know it. However, the tradition of a Sabbath day's journey, according to the Jews, was 2,000 cubits, which is a little over a half a mile. Half a mile. Now, the Jews derived this tradition from Numbers 35. And Numbers 35, you don't need to turn there. You might want to look at it later. Numbers 35 outlines the areas of land that were to be given to the Levites around each city. And when giving these instructions here, Numbers 35 and verse 4, it says, the common land of the cities which you will give the Levites shall extend from the wall of the city outward 1,000 cubits all around. And you shall measure outside the city on the east side 2,000 cubits, and on the south side 2,000 cubits, on the west side 2,000 cubits, on the north side 2,000 cubits. And the city shall be in the middle, and this shall belong to them as common land for the cities. And so the assuming that people, and in this particular case, I think the Levites would not be allowed to travel long distances on the Sabbath, God would have given them areas that would not violate the Sabbath command when needing to walk into the city. And while this scenario is certainly plausible, it's just it's a conclusion, it's an assumption. It's not directly stated as to why these common lands were placed in this way. And it doesn't exactly say what a safe distance is to travel on the Sabbath. In other words, you know, we have to think about it. We have to think about it. I believe that a moderate walk on the Sabbath does not violate the Sabbath. However, if you were going to ask me, well, how far is considered too far? That's debatable. Some people might say it's a little less than a mile. Some people might say it's just a little over a half a mile is too far. Some people might say something else. It's not clear, but of course I would have leaned to being better safe than sorry and keep it somewhere between a half a mile and a mile. But it's hard to keep track sometimes nowadays when you're walking, especially if you're having a good conversation and you're kind of like, whoa, maybe we should probably turn around now and start heading back home. In conclusion to the sermon today, we understand that the Sabbath is a special day where we remove the chains that bind us the other 6 days to the weekly grind, if you will. And I think Bill Fox stated it very well when he told me that he feels like the Sabbath is an island that we're kind of swimming out to once a week. And we swim out there and we can sit on our island and be separate from the worldly activities that go on all the other 6 days of the week. We can pause during this time. We can refocus, regroup, if you will, and consider the reason why we are here and what we are doing. Are we heading in the right direction? You know, get back to God, if you will. Not that we should be distant from him in the other days of the week, but sometimes we get caught up in all of our chores and our responsibilities. And so the Sabbath activities are very, very different. They require truly no real work, you know, except for some of the work by the ministry in setting up chairs or tearing down chairs or tables or what have you. But in order to get the full benefit of the Sabbath, we must do more than refrain from work. We should take the time to let our minds rest from the stresses of everyday life. All the thoughts that go about in our heads, the things we are considering, what need to be taken care of, what plans we are making. We need to stop thinking about those things and think about something else. Think about honoring God. Think about being a better person, a better Christian, a better husband or father, son or daughter, or friend. And this, of course, requires us to do no work. Think about it this way. Think of yourself as a ball. You are a ball. And the first day of the week begins and you start rolling down that road and you're going and going and you're going over rocks in the road and you're hitting potholes and over bumps, and then there's rain and there's snow, and it's kind of, you're moving and trying to maneuver your way about, going down that long stretch of road. But on the seventh day, you, that ball, comes to a stop. It stops rolling. And you sit, and you think, you meditate, you refocus your thoughts on God. You take the time to consider what the Sabbath means, why we're keeping it, how we are to be keeping it, who should be keeping it, and how it should be kept. I think I already said that, but you get the point. Then, when the seventh day ends, that ball starts rolling again, going on down the road of life. Now, something else that I want to briefly consider before we conclude is this. Interestingly, the Sabbath is a natural process that God wrote into the fabric of his creation. Not only do we have the 7-day week that goes all the way back to Adam and Eve. Not only do we have that, the seven-day cycle has surfaced in a field known as chronobiology. Developments in this emerging science support evidence that most biological organisms exhibit cyclic periods involving 7 days. And they're known as this. Science calls them this, circaseptin intervals. Circaseptin intervals. And these affect molecular and metabolic functions. One author about the calendar, trying to find out where is the true calendar and where does it come from, he wrote this. He says, they say that certain biorhythms in the human body work on seven-day cycles, including variations in heartbeat, blood pressure, and response to infection. The potential for rejection of a transplanted organ seems to peak at seven-day intervals. Other organisms, including bacteria, share these basic biorhythms. And a scientist by the name of Dr. Franz Halberg, he's one of the pioneers in this field of chronobiology, and he stated this. He said, what is clear is that they are inherited, these biorhythms, programmed into the genetic blueprint of the organism. Rhythms are the products of genes, not just in space, but in time. Isn't that interesting? Genes programmed by time. And this is a remarkable discovery showing that there are specific rhythms with a period of 7 days a week that exist within cells. And Halberg also stated this. He said, these weekly rhythms are broadly distributed across species and variables. They are found in unicells, insects, rodents, and a host of human variables. And so these circaseptin, circaseptin actually means seven-day cyclic rhythms, they are found in cells, not just throughout the human body, but in other parts of God's creation as well. And so we can see that the creation itself was actually designed to keep the Sabbath to some degree. And think about this. Think about what Christ said. What did he say? Christ said that the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. And so the Sabbath was made for us. And so it would make sense that God would write it into the fabric of our creation. You see, because God doesn't get tired. He wasn't exhausted after making, you know, recreating the earth with all of the trees and plants and animals and the bacteria and everything that exists on the planet as we know it today. He wasn't going, man, I'm just wore out. I need a break from this. This is a lot of work. No, he doesn't have to recuperate from exhaustion. But God was refreshed on the Sabbath day. And I think this is a reference to mental refreshing. It likely means that he stepped back and looked at everything he had done as he had planned it for untold millennia. Everything that he had done, he looked back and he considered it. And he meditated on it. And he thought about the processes that were going on and how perfect it was. And what did he say? It was good. He looked at his creation. He said, this is good. We'd look at it. I'd look at it and go, this is awesome. You know, but in any case, I think we get the point. And so God was refreshed and he considered what he had done and he did no work on the seventh day. And so all of us are to do likewise. You know, we all get caught up in the distractions of this world, and even though much of our work is necessary, constant activity with no respite, it can be a distraction, a big distraction. And there are books even. There's two books in the church library. One's called Sabbath Diagnosis, and the other one's called, I think it's called Keeping the Sabbath. And these are unbelievers that actually find the real mental and physical benefit of having a Sabbath day, of keeping a day of rest. Because we all get caught up in the things of this world. It can cause us to lose sight of why we are here, what we should be focusing on, what's really important and where we are headed if we have no Sabbath day. And therefore, God created the Sabbath, and he did so that we would stop what we're doing every day throughout the week, stop the activities that occupy much of our lives, and regroup. and to refocus with God. However, even though we might naturally be designed to observe the Sabbath, most people do not naturally observe it. It's something we have to make ourselves do. We have to tell ourselves we are going to do it, and we are going to strive to do it right. And that is why God gave us the command to remember the Sabbath day. But not only remember when it is to be observed, but to remember how to observe it and to keep it holy.